Hang on a minute, folks. I got to check an email here. It just came in. It couldn't come in during the break. It had to come in right now. Hang on just a second. It's from my brother saying he's not trying to be an annoyance. Greetings and welcome back. No, Snerdly's not pleading his case. That's a good point. Bo Snerdly suspended for the day, ladies and gentlemen, for a couple of reasons. Hopefully we'll be back tomorrow. In fact, this is funny. I was just talking to HR. HR is the emergency screener today. And he had a woman on the phone who didn't stay. He put her on hold, but a woman on the phone who wanted to chastise me for suspending Snerdly. And she said to HR, "I just love talking to Bo Snerdly." He said, "You talk to Bo Snerdly?" "Oh, yeah, I call him all the time." Snerdly's in there having personal conversation. I didn't know that. Anyway, here's the phone number, 800-282-2882. The email address is rush@eibnet.com. Folks, you know, I always like to share some of these things going on in my life with you. And I'm in a real dilemma here. My New York, my fashionable Upper East Side penthouse here in New York, I moved into it in 1995, and I have done nothing to it since. I've not upgraded any of the electronics, I've not redecorated, because I'm not here that much. I'm probably here a total of 20 working days every year. I have specific reasons for that, involving New York tax authorities. But the electronics in there are starting to fall apart. I have a media room in there, and I've got a 15-year-old rear projection TV. Piece of garbage now compared to what's out there, but it hasn't worked in 5 years. No picture. You turn on nothing, so I can't watch it. So I got to redo that room and take that TV out of there and replace it with some other kind of TV, the rack with all the electronics. I have to take that. I have to redecorate the whole room. And, well, I went to a sports bar to watch the Patriots and the Cowboys yesterday. Yeah, I did, because I got two TVs in a fashionable Upper East Side apartment that work, and neither of them are high definition. They're little Sonys. I don't have a wife, and I had to leave home to watch football. Exactly right. Anyway, I've got these two little Sonys. One's in the bedroom, and the other was in my little study. And the one in the bedroom doesn't have closed captioning. I can't watch television in bed anyway, so that's out. So I stayed in the study, but they're starting to get lines in that TV. So the whole thought of having to rip the place apart and put it back together, just getting the phone calls from the contractor, "Mr. Limbaugh, we're finding things here that we had no idea we were going to find. That original bid that we gave you is no longer applicable, and we got another 6 months for the project." And since I'm here so little, I haven't taken the time to get this done, but I guess I'm going to have to. But it just bugs me. You know, it just makes me mad, because I'm not going to be able to shepherd the project myself. I can't send Snerdly up to do it, because he's got to screen calls when he gets back from his suspension. Now, Stalin, oh, it's not going to be up Stalin's taste, Stalin the bodyguard and the security chief. No, he would be the one to shepherd the project. Anyway, it's a distraction, folks, and I'm a little distracted here today. You know, it's a good point, having to leave home, and I'm not even married. To watch football on a high definition screen. Oh, it was a great time I had, but it's not the way it's supposed to be. All right, this business with the Turks and the Kurds in northern Iraq and the United States Congress, the Democrats in particular. Speaking of the Democrats, by the way, they have now admitted they do not have the votes and will not have the votes to override the S-chip veto of President Bush. They do have the votes to override in the Senate, but they don't have the votes to override in the House. And there are two stories on this. The first story is how the Democrats don't have it and how Pelosi is a little bit upset. And she understands that their base is upset because they're always dissatisfied in the Democrat base. But the companion story is how the Republicans in the House are a little bit troubled by this because they don't have an alternative program. How about the status quo? How about just if you want to increase the amount of money proportionate to the number of poor kids that exist now that didn't when the program was originally authorized 10 years ago. You know, just throw a couple billion more dollars at it, keep the same guidelines, and go for it. And the president would sign it. You know, put the Democrats on it. I don't understand what's so difficult about this, especially when the Republicans have to know what this program is, as the Democrats have designed it. It's simply a stealth mechanism to get more and more toward their objective of socialized medicine, where you'll be pulling your own teeth with pliers, as they're now doing in the UK. I want to go back to, let's go to Friday, first of all, Friday afternoon. This is a story about the situation in Turkey. Kurdish separatist rebels said on Friday they were crossing back into Turkey to target politicians and police after Ankara said that it was preparing to attack them in the mountains of northern Iraq. As regional tensions rose, Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan cautioned that relations between Ankara and Washington were in danger over a U.S. congressional resolution branding as genocide massacres of Armenians by Ottoman Turks in 1915, nearly 100 years ago. Washington harbors growing concerns about the possibility of a major Turkish military incursion to crush Kurdish rebels seeking a homeland in eastern Turkey. U.S. officials fear that such an action could destabilize a relatively peaceful area of Iraq. Now, why is any of this happening? This is happening because the Democrats, who are unable or who don't have the guts to actually vote to defund the war in Iraq, are doing a sideshow here of bringing up a resolution that's already been passed, already been signed twice in this country, condemning Turkey for the genocide of the Armenians in 1915. And so this is being done deliberately to sabotage relations between the United States and Turkey. Turkey, of course, is crucial in terms of getting supplies and materiel into Iraq from the United States for the troops, keep them resupplied, and so forth. I mean, this is just dastardly what these people are doing. Now, later, this story came across the wire. Oil prices extended their rise on Monday after closing at a record high to end last week amid worries that supplies are insufficient for coming winter demand. Prices have also risen on concerns over the conflict between Turkey and the Kurds in northern Iraq. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on Saturday urged Turkey to show restraint in its response to the attacks from Kurdish rebels, but Turkish leaders have appeared to be less receptive to Washington's appeals since a committee of U.S. lawmakers passed a resolution last week labeling as genocide the World War I-era killings of Armenians by the Ottomans, a characterization that Turkey rejects. So the Turks are telling Condoleezza, you know, take it somewhere else. You know, you guys are going to try to, you know, offend us and embarrass us on the world stage. We're one of your allies here. They are a, quote-unquote, moderate Muslim nation. So I think, you know, let's call this what it is. This is Nancy Pelosi's war now. She's doing everything she can to encourage this little incursion by Turkey into northern Iraq after the Kurds and to disrupt the supply lines. And then there's this Democrats press on with genocide bill despite Turkish furor. Pelosi said some of the things that are harmful to our troops relate to values. Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, torture, all those issues are about who we are as a country. And she's just, you know, she said possible reprisals affecting Turkey's cooperation with the U.S. military were hypothetical and would not derail the resolution. And that's when she says, no, some things, this is about our values. What values? What timeliness here for your values? Now, this was discussed on Fox with the Beltway boys, Mort Kondracki and Fred Barnes. This was on Saturday on the Fox News Channel. Here's what Kondracki said.
Rush Limbaugh is saying that the Democrats are promoting this resolution in Congress in order to disrupt our relationship with Turkey, not get supplies, to limit supplies from Turkey to our troops in Iraq and cause a defeat in Iraq. I don't think that that's the case, but I think the Democrats should be very careful in proceeding with this resolution because the effect will be, or could be, that the Turks will stop allowing supplies through, and that will hurt hurt our troops.
Now, what kind of equivocation is that? Kondracki says Rush Limbaugh thinks that that's exactly what's going to happen, and that's why the Democrats are doing it. He says, I don't think that's right, but the Democrats better be careful, because this is what's going to happen. Now, what is that? That's the kind of equivocation that we get from people. It doesn't serve anything. He knows full well what's going to happen, and he's equivocating on whether or not the Democrats mean for it to happen. Now he's warning them to be careful. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're doing it with glee. Back in a second. Everyone's a winner. Hot chocolate. One of my favorite all-time tunes in our bumper rotation, 800-282-2882. Let's listen to Nancy Pelosi talking about the situation in Turkey. She was on this week with Stephanopoulos yesterday. He said to her, if the president or Secretary Gates or the chairman of Joint Chiefs called you and said they're just certain that this is going to put our military at risk, is it still worth going forward with your resolution?
The president hasn't called me on it, so that's a hypothetical. Some of the things that are harmful to our troops relate to values. Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, torture, all of those issues about who we are as a country. And I think that our troops are well served when we declare who we are as a country and increase the respect that people have for us as a nation.
I know it doesn't sound like it, but I am livid. This is idiocy. This insults the intelligence of anybody who heard this exchange. Folks, you know, they've made this personal now, and I am fed up with these people. I am at my wit's end with these people, what they have tried to do to destroy the morale of the mission, or of the troops, to destroy the mission itself. They run around and say, we support the troops, we don't support the mission. The troops have one concern, and that's the mission. And if you don't support the mission, you don't support them. And they have been trying, Pelosi and her crew, to undermine the troops since we went into Iraq. And it just is beyond the pale that they say, well, no, this is going to help the troops. Saying that we don't support genocide in Turkey 100 years ago, this will support the troops. We have to do right by these things. Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, torture, all of those issues about who we are as a country. This makes me want to spit. This is just offensive as it can be, especially coming from these people who have done everything they can. Why do you think we have a rotten image in the world if we do? My friends, I don't agree that our image is rotten, but they certainly want it to be, and they want it to be blamed on Bush. But who the hell, in public, for 4 years, have been running around ripping the hell out of this country? Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, John Kerry, you name it, John Murtha, it doesn't matter. Jay Rockefeller, take your pick, Ted Kennedy, publicly doing so. We've had Bill Clinton, we've had Al Gore, we've had Jimmy Carter, all Democrats traveling the world, ripping this country to shreds, saying that it's immoral, saying that our president is an idiot, and agreeing with socialists all over the world that George Bush is an idiot, a clown, or whatever. It's just unseemly. And we were talking about this at lunch yesterday. You know, I just have to think that there are far more many Americans who feel the same way I do and you do about this than any of us ever know. They're just not asked about it. And the popular perception in the drive-by media is that every American agrees with Democrats on everything. But this is just unseemly. There are Americans who are fed up with hearing their country run down day in and day out for the last 4 years. Our troops run down, criticized, impugned, day in, day out for the last 4 years. And then have what the Democrats say repeated on the nightly newscasts, on the cable networks, all over the newspapers and so forth. It is unseemly. Now, to offer this resolution, the third of its kind, two previously have already passed, to anger Turkey, the primary supply line for troops, and then to say, no, this is about our morality. This is about who we are as a country. Yeah, where were you during the Rwandan genocide? What are you doing besides flapping your gums over what's going on in Darfur? You know, the enemies of this country seem to be the allies of the United States Democrats. Just stunning. It's classless, it's unseemly, and it is, to me, folks, it is reprehensible. And this answer that she gives here, well, the president hasn't called me. You shouldn't need a phone call from the president to understand what you're doing, and she doesn't need a phone call. She knows exactly what she's doing. They all do on the Democrat side of this, know exactly what they're doing. Some of the things are harmful to our troops. Does she really believe that the rumors, the lies, the smears of U.S. soldiers at Guantanamo, at Club Gitmo, are actually hurting our troops in Iraq? What's hurting our troops in Iraq is Democrats and their judges. As in the first hour of this program, soldier from Queens kidnapped in a surprise attack by Al-Qaeda in the Triangle of Death. We are not allowed to get wiretaps on the phones and the communications the kidnappers are using for 10 hours because the lawyers have to approve the request for a warrant. In the middle of a war, not in the middle of street crime, in the middle of a war. And the Democrats want to keep those restrictions in place. They are handing victory. They're trying to hand victory to the enemy. They are failing because Al-Qaeda is on the run. There are even more stories in the stack today that I have coming up about how, you know, it's getting really, really tough to deny here that things are improving in Iraq. In fact, here it is. It's an editorial in the Washington Post, of all places, from yesterday. The evidence of a drop in violence in Iraq becoming hard to dispute. Meanwhile, some seemingly important facts about the main subject of discussion last month, whether there's been a decrease in violence in Iraq, have gotten relatively little attention. I wonder why. Because that doesn't fit the template, does it? Good news in Iraq does. We had the audio soundbites from those two journalists last week. Well, we can't report good news. Why, 1 month doesn't make a trend. Besides, how do we verify these numbers? We can't be sure these numbers are accurate. And yet the death toll goes up. Oh, the numbers have no question about them. They're totally accurate. And that, of course, is news. It's, it's maddening. A congressional study, several news stories in September questioned reports by the U.S. military that casualties were down. Senator Clinton, challenging the testimony of General Petraeus, asserted that civilian deaths have risen during the year's surge of American forces. But a month later, there isn't much room for such debate, at least about the latest figures, and they go on to cite how they have plummeted. Nevertheless, it's looking more and more as though those in and outside of Congress who last month were assailing General Petraeus' credibility and insisting that there was no let-up in Iraq's bloodshed were, to put it simply, wrong. This in the Washington Post yesterday. And so now we're going to, the Democrats want to screw this up because, as I, Il Rushbo, the all-knowing, all-caring, all-sensing, all-everything Maharishi, have been warning you about for the past 6 months, the last thing the Democrats can afford is editorials like that stick and be spread throughout the drive-by media. The last thing they can afford is the perception by the American people that we are winning and that victory is at hand. Politically, that cooks their goose. Politically, that finishes them because they've already got us losing. They're fundraising on it. They're running for office on it. The last thing they want is victory. And Mrs. Pelosi runs around and says this gobbledygook to Stephanopoulos is what she said. She ought to be ashamed. Half my brain tied behind my back just to make it fair. Here's another soundbite from Nancy Pelosi from Stephanopoulos. The question, the congressional approval ratings have taken a hit this year. A lot of that, as you know, is because of disaffection in a Democrat base, the anti-war activists. Cindy Sheehan's running against you.
I respect dissatisfaction with the war. I myself would not give Congress high marks on ending the war. We don't have the veto, or the pen, the sign, or not to veto. But we are doing all we can to change the debate. I'm one of the most vociferous opponents of the war, and so that is even more ironic. But I was an advocate myself. That by their nature, they are dissatisfied, persistent, and just keep fighting. And I respect that.
This is, you know, if in a sane world, folks, this house of cards that's a Democrat party would just crumble to shreds a year from now, November, and Hillary Clinton would already be the whole party would be disqualified in terms of having legitimacy because of the things and the stunts that they have pulled against their own country just in the last 6 months alone. I know that's not the case because this is not a sane and just world right now. But I'm telling you, this is just the things that they're doing to try to sabotage this effort even in the midst of profound success. More and more stories are starting to hit, too, and that's just, I think, ratcheting the Democrats up even more. But remember, I have faith that a far greater number of Americans are going to see this and surprise everybody on Election Day than anybody in that conducts and creates conventional wisdom is putting out. I also think, you know, Mrs. Clinton's making a big play for the female vote. She's throwing a female card on the table now. She went on a View today. And one of the things I was in with Cookie's office as she's preparing the sound bites, and I never watched a View. Good Lord, who would? What kind of empty, miserable life must you have to want to watch that show? So anyway, I walk in, and you know, Cookie's got all these monitors. She has to have all these shows on so we can get these sound bites. And Whoopi Goldberg's asking Hillary Clinton a question about China. And I don't know that Whoopi Goldberg could find it on a map. And I therefore also don't know that Whoopi Goldberg gives a rat's rear end what China's doing. So, but they have Hillary on there, so they probably went back to a little class and got some questions to ask Mrs. Clinton, because she's a presidential candidate, and we girls on The View here must act like we know what we're doing when we're talking big policy stuff. And when she asked her the question about China, you know, Hillary came out with the usual, said, we've got to be smarter about what we do. China, I've been warning people a lot. For crying out loud, half your campaign funds come from China. We know you're not going to do anything about China. Have anybody heard of Norman Shue, for crying out loud? Charlie Tree. James Riotti. Well, that's a lipo group. That's not the Chi-Coms. But, I mean, it's just laughable. Laughable moment. Here's Willie in Michigan. It's a cell call. Nice to have you on the EIB network. Hello.
Good to talk to you, Rush.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to meet you one day.
Thank you.
I think this would be a real good time for you to refresh everybody's memory how all the top tier of the Democratic Party said that Bush was isolating us from our allies. We need to make better friends with our allies, helping us with the war. Now look what they're doing, chopping us off at the knees with Turkey. I can't believe everybody can't plainly see what they're doing.
Well, you know, there's some people worried here that the Democrats are going to get away with this because they won't have any fingerprints on all of this, as far as the drive-by media is concerned, because the drive-bys are not going to report the Democrats' involvement here in order to protect them. And, you know, that is a legitimate concern. As far as a lot of Americans will know, the Turks just decided to say to hell with the war in Iraq and gave us, you know, caused trouble, and it's just another ally defecting from Bush and so forth. And make no mistake, that's exactly the way the Democrats wanted to be reported, which is why I'm shouting this stuff from the rooftops, because the Democrats are the ones causing this, and the Turks are the ones telling us so. The Turks are the ones reacting to this. They don't want to be embarrassed. This is an ally. You're exactly right. And in the early days of this administration, particularly during those, what was it, a year and a half at the Security Council, or 14 months at the Security Council, all the Democrats are saying, we can't go this alone. We've got to stick with our allies. Remember John Kerry, global test in the 2004 presidential campaign in one of the debates? Well, we need a global test out there. We need to go around and get permission. Remember how he mocked that? And he had to pull back from it. This is what I mean. That's a great point, Willie. This is what I mean about this current crop of Democrats and liberals. Is you cannot believe anything they say. And in, during all of this, it's not just Mrs. Clinton, folks. You know, when she criticizes the war, she only says what she won't do. And what she won't do is what Bush is doing. And that's the secret to the message. She's still campaigning to the base. Well, I'm not going to get engaged in torture, and I'm not going to have things going on at these prisons, and I'm not going to be spying, and I won't do this, and I won't do that. And the Democrat base goes, yeah, because all they're oriented around and what animates them is their hatred for Bush. But we never hear what these people will do. We never hear how they're going to keep us safe. They never tell us what they will do in certain circumstances regarding national security. And here's Pelosi doing it in her own way. So they're still running against George W. Bush. I know it's still primary time, so they're still running against the guy that their base hates the most. But at some point, they're going to have to get off of that, and they probably won't. Because I don't think that they're going to be able to gin up the same amount of hatred for a Rudy or a Fred Thompson or a Mitt Romney, whoever the nominee is. simply don't think they're going to be able to gin up that kind of personal hatred. And that personal hatred's one animates them, and they've got to keep their people animated. But at some point, you know, emotions have reservoirs, and reservoirs empty. And the I made a little joke about it the other day, but can you imagine how many Democrats are going to be upset when they go into the ballot box on the voting booth in November of 08 and find Bush's name not on the ballot to vote against? They're going to be lost. What do they do? Lincoln, Nebraska, this is Josh. You're next on the EIB Network. Sir, hello.
Ditto's Rush.
Hi.
Well, I'll keep my comments brief. Yesterday on Fox News Sunday, Steny Hoyer, the majority leader, got up and said that for 24, 25 years, he's been trying to get this Turkey Amendment out there. And I'm just wondering if, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in 1993, the Clinton White House and there had both houses of Congress, the Democrats, had that they should have passed this then and there. If it was such a big issue with Democrats, Steny should have brought it up then. Pelosi was there then. They should have all brought it up then at that point when it could have gotten through if it was such a big issue. Obviously, this is politics. They're trying to play politics.
They did bring it up. They brought it up in 1984. They did bring it up at some point in the 90s. This is the third time in the last 20 years they've brought it up. But you're exactly right. The timing of this has nothing to do with anything other than sabotaging what is now turning into a positive news out of Iraq, because they can't afford for that to happen. They're too politically invested in defeat. I'm telling you, it's just unseemly. And that doesn't even cover it halfway, because they're Democrats. I'm trying to maintain my composure here at the same time. Describe how livid I am about it. Ann in Sarasota, Florida, thank you for waiting, or calling, rather, on the EIB Network. Hi.
Hi there, Rush. You're my hero, believe it or not. You really are. But what I'm wanting to make a point is, at Pelosi, if that's what a woman does as in the House, as a leader, look what a woman as a president, as such as Hillary Clinton, would do. Maybe the American people, they've got to be able to see that.
Well, it's interesting. You know, Mrs. Clinton is playing the female card now. Just exactly as Ségolène Royal did in the French race over there for prime minister, president, whatever they call him. And it was, I think it was a debate between Sarkozy and Ségolène Royal where she made this big play for women. And said that she deserved to be elected because she's a woman. And Sarkozy just listened to her, and then sliced her and diced her, and she was finished. And she didn't end up getting but 42 or 43% of the female, maybe not even that much of the female vote. Now Mrs. Clinton, for whatever strategical reason, is making a play for women based on the fact that she is a woman. And, of course, by coincidence, I'm certain, there are countless new stories today about how warm and friendly Hillary is and how people are changing their mind on how she's so hard and emotionless. How she's really warming up now and women are really taking to her. So we're getting predictable news stories. Hillary's out there saying, in fact, it's going to be women who decide who is president in 2008. And the dirty little secret is it's not. It's white men. It's who they vote for, folks. And I still maintain that there are a lot of white males in this country, in certain regions, that are going to look at Mrs. Clinton and not even just have to hear one or two sentences, and they're not going to take the chance of bringing their ex-wife back or their two ex-wives back and making her president. It just isn't going to happen. And I will lay you 10 to 1 that a majority of women do not vote for Mrs. Clinton. Now, that's I'm going way out on a limb here in the general election. But I think they're misreading all of this. They look at women as monolithic. Mrs. Clinton's going to get the female vote because she's female. That's what Ségolène Royal thought in Paris and in France. And it didn't happen. And all these female commentators, from Mara Liasson to Cokie Roberts, any number of them, were just beside themselves, couldn't understand. Why would women not vote for a woman? Well, maybe because they don't think like you. Maybe they're not liberals as much as you think and don't engage in group politics. Maybe these women actually cared about ideas in France, as many women in this country do. Baba Duman. Ségolène Royal got 48% of the female vote in the French elections, not the 42. Wanted to offer that correction. 52% supported the overall winner, Nicolas Sarkozy. Now, you know, Newsweek has revamped their website. They're no longer partnered up with PMSNBC. They got their own website. They've done something, changed the appearance of the magazine and so forth. They got their first independent website up today, and there's a review of a forthcoming book. The review written by Jonathan Darman. It's a book on Hillary Clinton, or the Clinton marriage, actually. And it is by Sally Bedell Smith. Now, some of the stuff in this excerpted from this book. And by the way, I'm not trying to obsess here on Mrs. Clinton. I'm just telling you there has been a noticeable shift in media coverage and Clinton strategery. Now they're focusing in on the women, and they're focusing in on how she's warming up, how she's got all these feelings, and how people are finally finding that she's not this stiff mannequin, but we really like Hillary, people are saying. And, of course, one of those stories happened to be a quote from a vice chair of some Democrat Party committee in New Hampshire who said he'd been out talking to Democrats. Oh, yeah, a lot of people are finding she's a lot friendlier than she used to be, at least appears that way. Wow, what a source to go ask about Mrs. Clinton. At any rate, here's a quote from this story about Sally Bedell Smith's book. Which is a even this story, by the way, is about the gripping, the grating psychodrama that is the Clintons' marriage. A new book tries to make sense of the gripping, grating psychodrama. Is anybody obsessing about this marriage, or do we all know what it is already? We all know what it is. Nobody's obsessing about gripping, grating psychodrama. At any rate, here's a telling quote from the story. Smith's Hillary Clinton wants only to be a public woman, a wonk, and a warrior for the Clintons' noble causes. Arriving in the White House, she and her husband make her status clear to staffers. Staffers are to call her the Supreme Court, mindful that the First Lady had the final say. She strives for cool detachment, but her husband's coterie sees the cracks. They are wimps, she tells them, Mrs. Clinton tells his staff. They're wimps, she tells them in tirades, men who don't have testicles and don't know how to fight, quote unquote. Neither Clinton, by the way, talked to Sally Bedell Smith for the book. Quickly, her real target emerges, the president himself. She knew how to push his buttons, a senior official tells Smith. Makes it sound like Hillary ran that whole show and ran his staff and gave him all kinds of grief for being gutless and testicleless and all these other things. And how cold, and it makes a big point here about how the key to success in politics is never having emotion and never allowing emotion to compromise your principles. Don't compromise goals for the sake of emotion. Don't discover your feelings. Don't share your feelings. And, of course, this is the Hillary that we know. Now, all of this, my take on this is these things don't happen by coincidence. Nothing that happens with the Clintons is coincidence. There has to be polling data out there. And the polling data or the focus group data has to show she's not likable. The negatives are still pretty high. She seems a little cold and awkward. So here comes the cackle. The cackle's gone. Here came the $5,000 for every baby. That's gone. It's been replaced by a 401k for everybody with a $1,000 seed donation. Who knows how long that will last. Now we've got the stories about how warm and fuzzy she is, and people are starting to like her. And this is just like the news, the polling data that we got on the Iraq War involving public opinion. Public opinion never was what the polls said it was. They were trying to create that opinion with the polls. Polling data anymore is simply a way to get editorial opinions on the front page or the lead item in a news story as so-called news. A quick timeout here, folks. We'll be back after this. Okay, folks, a reminder, we are up to $45,100 on the eBay auction for the original copy, the original of the Harry Reid letter to Mark Mays, the CEO of Clear Channel, my syndication partner. That auction will go until Friday at 1 o'clock. We have been deluged with requests for us to make copies of the Harry Reid letter available for a donation. A smaller amount. Most people don't have the means to donate $45,100 even for something like this. But people who wanted to contribute to the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation have been requesting copies. We have made a PDF file available that is a copy of Senator Reid's letter, and you can download it for free. We're not, folks, you already paid for this letter because these senators were on work time. They were on normal work hours when they wrote this letter and signed it and so forth. You've already paid for this. Now, we've also got a link up at the rushlimbaugh.com homepage. If you want to send a donation to the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, by all means do so. We're not going to require you to do that. I want as many copies of the Harry Reid letter in American homes as possible. So feel free to download it. It's yours. And remember that the auction on eBay with the original goes until Friday at 1 o'clock, and our current amount is at $45,100. I think some of the big money is going to hang back until the end of the week, of course, to keep from bidding this up. So it's going to get exciting as we move toward the end of the week. Brief timeout. Final hour straight ahead before you know it.